Oh, hi, this is Chris Kohler of Wired.com's Game Life, and you're listening to Radio Free Nintendo, the freest Nintendo radio that I've ever heard of.
Welcome, everyone, to Radio Free Nintendo, episode 152, and we are very excited this week to introduce guest star and co-founder of this very podcast, Mike Sklens.
Hey, I'm back. I'm glad to be back. Very glad to be back.
Are you really?
I honestly am very excited to be back because I don't think I've done one of these in at least a year.
It's been, I think, since episode 100.
Yeah.
So that's about a year.
It's over a year. Well, we are very glad to have you, sir. You always have a seat here, of course. I think you've earned that.
I built the damn chairs.
That's right. And we're going to get into new business. But actually, before we do that, I want to announce the winner of the most recent retroactive poll. And I don't even know what it is yet. I'm actually navigating over to it.
I hope it's a tie.
If it is, we're going to resolve it right here.
This is live.
This is the special TurboGrafx edition. And very close race between the top three vote getters. We had the winner is going to be Ninja Spirit with 32.5% of the vote.
Congratulations.
And right behind that, actually, only one vote less was Choaniki, and one vote below that was Bonk's Revenge. So, we're going to be playing Ninja Spirit, and by the way, as I outlined in the very first post of that thread, Choaniki is now going to be retired from Retroactive.
It's done.
It's the three strikes and you're out rule. So.
Sad day.
You know what? If you didn't vote for Choaniki, you hate fun.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
You really think the game's that good, do you?
No, it's fun to talk about. Ergo, you hate fun.
Mm-hmm. There's something about dead horses and flogging.
It's not stopped us thus far.
I went for Bonk's Revenge because I wanted to play it, but anyway, we're going to play Ninja Spirit. We will probably start that next week, and if you're listening, I really, really hope that you will give it a shot. If it's within your means to do so, it is on Virtual Console for 600 points. I'll be downloading it tonight probably or tomorrow, and we're going to play it and talk about it.
I may boycott this just because Choaniki was not chosen.
I
don't know if I can control this.
John, did you vote?
Yeah, I voted for Choaniki.
Well, guess what? I haven't voted yet. It's a tie now.
No, it's not. Voting's over.
Can I vote for Choaniki?
You can. Choaniki wins.
Hey, you guys had 2 weeks to vote, and you didn't.
I'll roll with these results. That's fine, but I'm not going to like it. It doesn't mean I have to like it.
There you go.
I'll be crying.
You're the,
tears of man beams as I'm playing.
Ninja Spirit. Tears of man beams. Wow. That's great. That's a great image.
All right.
You are crying the man's ultimate weapon. All right.
It's the best of
so
man
we will
get.
Be playing Ninja Spirit for TurboGrafx 16. If you decide to play along with us and want to leave some thoughts on it with a chance to be read on the air, look in the Nintendo World Report forums. I will be creating, in the podcast discussion area, I'll be creating a thread just for discussion of the game. So leave your comments there, and hopefully we'll have a good conversation about this. From what I've heard, Ninja Spirit is kind of like Ninja Gaiden, but I guess faster or more, it's more shootery. I watched a video of it, and it looks like there's a lot more crazy stuff on the screen than in Ninja Gaiden. So it looks kind of like a mix between like a shoot 'em up and a ninja game. So could be interesting. We'll see. It's been recommended, suggested a lot of times. So, all right, new business time. It has been a whole year since we heard what Mike was playing. And I have a feeling, Mike, that lately you haven't been doing a whole lot of Nintendo gaming. And hopefully by the end of the episode, we'll have convinced you to at least check out a couple things.
Maybe you will, but you are completely correct in assuming that I have not touched any of my Nintendo consoles in probably about a year.
This makes me sad. This makes me sad.
It's sad. I mean, I don't know. I was talking before.
I mean, at least
show.
When you were on our website staff, I knew you weren't playing Wii and DS games, but at least you were talking about them sometimes.
I was playing the ones you sent me.
Yeah.
Yeah, he actually got his Dewey's Adventure review in, unlike some people with them.
Ah, Dewey's Adventure. I actually found a game like in the bottom of my closet last week, and I sent it into Amazon. It was a review copy of Horse Life for Nintendo DS.
Which is actually probably Elite Beat Agents clone.
Probably the best horse game / Elite Beat Agents clone ever devised.
If anyone ever wondered why there was an aim of an episode called Mike Loves Horse Life, that is the reason, right. Not something more
exactly
sinister.
So Mike, you actually got that review in, right?
Horse Life, I think I did.
Oh, I'm not so sure about that one.
I was just saying, if you have it, we don't want it.
Now you can keep it, man. I gotta look it up. It's all yours. Now. Horse Life, I would have written it because I could not believe. Like, my mind was blown by that game just by the sheer fact that the guys who made it clearly didn't want to be making that game and clearly were playing a lot of Elite Beat Agents at the time. So they just figured, instead of making a stupid pet sim, we'll just make Elite Beat Agents and put a horse on top of it.
Genius.
That's a really common thing that I've seen in the past few years, is that a lot of these licensed games will kind of mimic really successful original titles and just put the license over it. And it makes a lot of them pretty playable. They're not as good as the original, but they're surprisingly not complete shit like you would expect.
If I did write the review, it was never posted because it's not on the site right now.
Really?
But there is a preview with the subtitle Horses Are Go.
You wrote a preview of this game?
Wow. Good.
It's amazing.
So I actually dug it up and sent it into Amazon for trade credit because it was somehow worth like $9 on Amazon.
Oh, weird. There's a whole nice collecting subculture.
$9 for a game that is like over a year old. Well, probably a year and a half old at the time. I should have played it before I sent it in, but my DS was over at my girlfriend's place. So, oh well. So other than digging up Horse Life, I have not, like I said, I haven't touched any of the Nintendo consoles in my house.
Well,
forever.
What have you been playing?
I just beat Infamous for PlayStation 3, and that was really good.
Okay, well, that game has not been talked about on this show.
Well, that game was really, really good. Did we ever talk about Crackdown back when I had an Xbox? Well, I still have an Xbox, but...
James and I we talked about it a little bit at one point.
Yes, we talked about it, and then we talked about how Johnny's a complete dick when you play online with him and run you over with cars on stairways.
Well,
Crackdown is such a great game, but Infamous is Crackdown, but you can shoot lightning out of your hands. It's really awesome.
I gotta get that.
And now, Mike, were you a fan of the Sly Cooper stuff?
I actually never played any of the Sly Cooper games.
Okay.
I know. I remember everyone talking about Sly Cooper, and I remember everyone raving about Rocket Robot on Wheels, but I never played any of them.
I haven't played Rocket. I'd like to.
The first Sucker Punch game I ever played was Infamous, and I really, really liked it. So now I kind of want to go back and play all those old games, but my PlayStation 3 doesn't play PlayStation 2 games, so I can't.
Yet.
Yeah, well.
Yet.
Got my fingers crossed on that one, but I don't see it coming anytime soon. So I've been playing that, and I've been playing Rock Band.
Oh, you always play Rock Band. Did you ever get sick of it?
The Xbox at this point is honestly just the Rock Band machine. I don't use it. I haven't used it for anything else except for Penny Arcade Adventures. That's it. And I played through those, and if it wasn't that, I was playing Rock Band.
Yeah. With Rock Band, Mike, have you played the Fish song that they put up?
No, I have not. I know you're probably
you should.
Mad at me for that.
You should. I haven't played it yet.
Send me 160 Microsoft silly bucks and I'll buy it.
Yeah. Well, actually, the reason I can't play it this summer because I didn't bring my Rock Band instruments with me. So I'm going to have to wait till I get back in the fall. But I really wanted to. It was part of a pre-Bonnaroo pack that they released of several bands.
I was very upset
that
they've released two Warped Tour packs so far, and Less Than Jake hasn't been in either of them. It's a real bummer.
Well, there is at least one Less Than Jake song.
Not in Rock
in
Band.
Rock Band.
Nope.
No, there isn't.
Maybe. I was thinking of Jimmy Eat's World.
Yeah, different band entirely.
I'm sure they sound completely different.
Well, they're not ska. They do sound quite different.
Okay. I'm being an asshole.
That was a bit of a bummer for me, but I'm waiting with bated breath for Beatles Rock Band at this point. I can't fucking wait for that game.
Yeah, I mean, it would be fun.
Oh, and Peggle. I've been playing Peggle.
Oh,
all
God.
The time.
No.
Dude, I love Peggle.
Peggle on my
Peggle's
iPhone.
Awesome.
Whenever I have a free moment.
Does the interface work well on iPhone?
Surprisingly well. I was actually, I was very impressed with how well. I almost think sometimes it works better than it does on the computer.
My ass. So,
conversation is just fucked now. It is. I mean, Peggle on the iPhone, over. We're done.
If they could only get Plants vs. Zombies onto the iPhone, I would be set. I wouldn't need any other device to play games on.
I think they probably... I played the demo for that on PC, and it was really cool.
Plants vs. Zombies is the best sort of tower defense game ever.
Well, it's very different, though, from that.
Yeah, it's not quite tower defense, but...
So, I was going to say about Rock Band, like, I remember when I first heard about Rock Band, I was really excited by the idea that you could play it online, and because, you know, it had vocals, and it would really feel like you were playing against another real person, you know, and you are playing with another person if you make like an online band. But then I found out that it doesn't transmit your vocals over the internet connection. So you only hear the original song vocals. And to me, that just makes it not very much fun. Like Guitar Hero 3, I remember I played some of that online because it was a big deal that the Wii version had online play. And it's really not fun to play Guitar Hero.
No, those games are not fun because
online.
No matter how... even kind of good you think you are, there is always a guy out there who's a million times better.
Well, but even beyond that, there's just not very much interaction
between
the two. And there's not any creativity in the way that you play. I mean, to me, online games are about like doing things that are interesting and fun and surprising and
like running people over with cars.
Yeah, and like none of that stuff.
No, none of that's in Rock Band. Rock Band is a multiplayer game designed for your living room. It always has been.
Yeah, I just think online modes really haven't been used very well in music
games are online to check off the box, let's be honest.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, it could be really exciting and awesome, but
leaderboards are nice,
they haven't used
it. The Score Hero kids sure love their online duels, but as far as actually playing the game proper online, it's you may as well not.
Right.
Well, I mean, you can't see the other people making an ass of themselves, so I mean,
Could if with video, I mean, some platforms have that capability.
Yeah, I mean, the PlayStation can record you while you play SingStar.
Yeah.
Do you really play SingStar?
While you sing in SingStar, you can record
you sing
it and
SingStar.
Put it on YouTube. At the very least, you can do that.
Oh,
that's
God.
A better online feature than Guitar Hero and Rock Band have done so far. Anyway, I was going to say, I'm looking forward to playing Beatles Rock Band with you online, but then I was just thinking, actually...
No, you're not.
What's the point? I'm looking forward to playing Beatles Rock Band, period.
So that's what I got.
All right. So, James.
Yes.
I heard you got the conduit.
Yes.
Do you have anything to add over what we had last week? How much have you played it so far?
I actually just got home with it. So I've gotten through the first two stages in about 10 minutes.
Okay. The stages do get longer.
Good because they're really short.
I had a chance to play it at Penny Arcade Expo last year, and I thought it was pretty good. But that was almost a year ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's funny because having played the first two stages, it blows my mind how terrible a level choice they made for the E3 demo.
Mm, yes.
It was
like the last level.
Everybody just kept getting just rocked every time they'd start playing.
I mean, I'm like 70% through the game and I still haven't gotten to that level.
Is it possible that with all the other times it was there, like at PAX and stuff, that they'd already used all the other
the
levels?
Whole game
of
the demo.
Yeah.
In the demo, do you walk across a bridge and fight a giant monster?
Yes!
That's the same demo they had at PAX last year.
Oh, it's even worse!
The monster on the bridge.
Not a good level to show off.
I saw like one guy do it, but he was from Higher Voltage, so he doesn't count.
So everybody who goes to play that, everybody I watched play a demo, they'd go through for a little bit, and then at some point they would inevitably get smoked, put the controller down and walk away just beside themselves with just disgust.
Not good demo design.
It wasn't there a part in the demo that everybody got lost at, like you couldn't see where the door was?
Yeah, there's
something?
A place where you have to crouch and walk through a hole in the building, and it
That's
doesn't
right,
look
yeah.
like you
I
would fit there.
Everybody got pissed at that point, like, how
yes.
am I going?
Bad level design.
But see, if they had picked like the second level, which is Reagan International Airport, I think that would have been a good demo, although it doesn't really show any of the aliens, so that's probably why they didn't pick it.
And it probably doesn't show off all the fancy like lighting effects and all that orb stuff too that they had in there.
Right.
Not really. Right. It's more of a straightforward shooter. But it's a good pick up and play level because you get to experience the controller without having to like be proficient at it yet. Because essentially, I just stood around and just held down the B trigger and just sprayed the whole airport with bullets.
That level's pretty easy.
Yeah,
it does get harder though.
Yeah.
Yeah. The next area is hard. The very end of it is hard because level three is a bitch.
I figure it's gonna get harder substantially because the first stage, I literally just stood there and let them just whack me.
Well,
one
of the problems with the game is that there's spikes. It's really, really easy, really, really easy, then incredibly hard, and then right back to kind of easy again. Like, there's there's a couple of places in the game where you're just like, oh my god, why did this suddenly get 20 times harder than it just was in that last
Dead
area?
Dead Rising. I hated that about Dead Rising.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Dead Rising, you're playing, and you're like, this is a really great game, and you're having fun, and you're killing zombies, and then all of a sudden, the difficulty goes from, like, 2 to, like, 200, and you can't do anything, and you're
Dead Rising is one of those games that should never be hard. Like, it should just be a big sandbox.
Yeah, but it gets it's not like it gets difficult to the point where, oh, I'm enjoying this challenge. It just gets absolutely prohibitively, you know, kick your ass difficult. Not fun at all.
Mm-hmm. Like guys driving around in the truck with the machine gun running you over like Johnny.
That's about the point where I stopped playing Dead Rising.
So, besides that, I did polish off the Apollo Justice Ace Attorney. Which I owe the game a modicum, like, just a little bit of respect, because it did get substantially better than after the first case, because I think I noted it something along the lines of, I hate the characters, was the phrase I used. I don't hate them anymore, I just don't like them nearly as much as the original characters, but TYP also made a similar comment in the talkback thread that he thinks Capcom wanted you to hate the characters in the first trial, because he had the same experience.
Yeah. Alright, so the series is redeemed for you a little bit.
A little bit. Kind of annoyed that that's the end of the series for a while, at least.
Well, now you can get all hyped up for Perfect Prosecutor.
Oh, I already am.
Probably, I would think that's coming out next year in the US.
Yeah, I think it is.
Yeah, it's out in Japan, isn't it, already? But, you know, these things tend to take quite a while.
Third-person prosecuting.
Nothing better.
Well, I got The Conduit a few days ago, and I've been playing it quite a bit. The single player, I think, is good, not great. Pretty much what John said in his excellent review.
In his now quoted review.
Widely quoted, actually, I think is the
widely quoted. Right.
Did someone write it on a bathroom stall?
Yeah. Actually, on the toilet paper, actually, is where it is.
Awesome.
No, I think his review is, sorry, you know, Johnny. I agree with it for
it's
the most
a good thing
part.
I'm not working tomorrow, because I might be inclined to do that.
And I've really enjoyed the online. I've only played it a couple times, but I found it to be very engrossing, and I played it for a couple hours each time, I think. Had a lot of fun with the guys from the forums that John mentioned last week. They're really funny, very easygoing guys. We had a lot of fun. They're all way better than I am at the game.
How does it work with the WeSpeak thing?
WeSpeak is pretty crappy. I mean, the thing
is,
the fact that it works at all makes the game so much more fun. It's not a testament to the tech itself. It's just a testament to how good of a concept voice chat is and what voice chat does for online gaming. Because it's already the most fun I've ever had playing an online game on my Wii, just because of voice chat. I mean, it makes that huge of a difference. I've played a fair number of online games for Wii, and it really makes a huge difference to have voice chat. With that said, the voice chat implementation is really terrible.
We did a whole feature on how bad it is on Smash Brothers, so that's not fair.
Yeah. But I will say, having played Smash Brothers sort of with or without Skype, you know, you could tell that, I mean, if that had had voice chat, it would have been a lot of fun.
It would be perfect.
Because you all could talk about how bad the lag is.
Yeah, you know, you could kind of, you know, have a good laugh and console each other, or then just talk about the weather or football or whatever when it gets really bad. But, you know, it adds so much. Like, it's such a shame. That, and, you know, it would have been nice in Mario Kart as well. Excitebots more so, because obviously WeSpeak was out by then.
Yeah, I mean, right. Excitebots, you could all get excited about Super Sandwich. It'd be great.
No, I mean, it would. Excitebots really, it is a good online game, even without voice chat. It would be much better with it. And it's just a real shame that that didn't happen. But The Conduit, it benefits from being a first-person shooter, so it's not as straightforward, linear as a racing game. It's more of a sandbox environment in that, you know, you don't really know where people are coming from or where they're going. People find different routes to take, and they shoot you with different weapons. So it ends up being, there's more possibilities for things to happen. Mm-hmm. And so there's more to talk about. There's more crazy stuff. Yeah, it's more unpredictable. More like Smash Brothers, really. So The Conduit, I mean, it's not a brilliant multiplayer game, and the level designs are not awesome. There's one or two that I like a lot better than the others. But I do think the weapons are generally good, although it's bizarre to me that there's no sniper rifle. I mean, when was the last time I played a first-person shooter that didn't have a sniper rifle?
There are games with guns that have a substantial scope on them. I mean,
But it's not to the level of like a sniper rifle, though.
No.
Yeah. You can kind of snipe using the strike rifle, kind of, but like by charging it, I think.
That might have been a conscious decision, though, because basically people, snipers in games make the game more fun for themselves and less fun for everyone else?
That's the best part.
It depends.
I was playing the Uncharted 2 beta last week or a week or two ago, and I would just sit behind, like, I would get up on the second or third story of the level and then just hide behind something and pop out and just snipe people across the level and just ruin their good time. It's great.
I love the I love the X-ray sniper rifle in Perfect Dark. Well, that, to me, that was awesome.
Yes, the one-hit kill machine, yes.
It seems like maybe sniper rifles wouldn't... All of their levels seem pretty small, so maybe they thought that the sniper rifles wouldn't be appropriate for those levels.
Yeah,
that's possible.
I could see that if the single player didn't really support a sniper rifle, it not being in the final, in the online stuff.
Yeah.
I mean, I have to say, I mean, the multiplayer is definitely fun, but other than the sniper rifle, the real issue I have with it is that the graphics are terrible in the online multiplayer. There is a major downgrade to the visual fidelity, and I mean, it's not that I'm a graphics whore, but that's obviously part of this game's appeal, and one of the reasons that you would want to buy this game is to see the nice graphics. And you go from the single player, and the funny thing is it's not split screen. I mean, if it was four player split screen, I would expect this. You know, we on N64, some of those games are just turn into Picasso in four player split screen. It's just flashes of
color. I guess we know now why they don't have split screen in it, because it would have been getting down to that abstract level.
But yeah. I don't understand how the on a technical level why having full screen online multiplayer you have to dumb down the graphics to this extent.
It seems to be true of a lot of games.
Really
though.
Bad.
Well, the thing is, I think that has to do with the fact that they're supporting up to 12 players in there.
It could probably have to cut
costs
and maybe
somewhere.
Maybe they've done it to try to bring down the lag or
probably
something. Yeah. Part of it's a testament to how good the game looks in the single player, but the difference between the gulf between single and multiplayer is like, holy shit, this game looks like ass online. and it doesn't matter because it's still really fun, but it's distracting. I found it was like, oh my god, I can't believe how much worse the graphics are online. It's kind of a weird thing. I didn't expect that at all. But you know, being full screen online, I didn't think there'd be any real difference between the graphics, and there is a huge difference.
Yeah,
but,
I didn't think it was that bad.
Still,
I mean,
it's still super fun.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like, I mean, when we've talked about this too with, like, you know, my reviews. I know Kotaku, they did their Franken review, and they kind of looked at a couple of sites that posted reviews. And
nice pimping yourself there, John.
Well, no, but I mean, the thing is, though, it's like, it's funny because this game has gone, like, on the one hand, you have people that have given it, like, a 7, and basically, really, they've given it a 7, but they've effectively shit all over it.
Well, that's what
and
a then, 7 you know, is, it's the bottom of the scale, so...
That's a good point.
It's funny because they showed they had the quotes that they usually do for their little Franken reviews, and then they had the little score graph. Uh-huh. And one site gave it like a 4.
Yeah, was that Giant Bomb? I think
it was Giant Bomb. Give it a 2 out of 5.
They gave The Conduit a 4 out of 10.
The 2 out of 5. They have a 5-star system.
Oh, okay.
But Edge did give it 4 out of 10.
I would expect that.
Yeah, I know. You know, they gave Excitebots 4 as well.
If it comes out on the week, it's the
ceiling. I respect
is a 5
Edge and what they do, but clearly they're not aligned with me. <That's>
what, Yeah, but the funny thing is that they gave it a 4, and John, you gave it an 8, right?
8.5.
They gave it an 8.5.
Yeah, and I could discern appreciably no difference in tone between the quotes they chose for it.
I guess the text was objective and the score wasn't.
It was bizarre.
Well, the funny thing was it kind of made us look at like a fanboy site or something like that. But I was just like, you know what? I didn't really, you know, honestly, like I didn't hold the game to the same standards as I would a first-person shooter on the 360 or PS3. Why would I? I think that's retarded.
Yeah. I think you can hold it to some design and convention standards. Like
absolutely, and that's what I hammered it on because I said that mm-hmm. the story is as cliche as you can get. I mean, the characters, Michael Ford, John Adams, come on, can't you come up with some more interesting names than that? The
well,
Trust?
You know,
I mean, that's brutal.
That aside, I mean, the plot is pretty silly. And
yeah, I think that the ending is brutal
to the
single player.
I can't think of any first-person shooter that has a good story except Call of Duty 4.
But I think that you could get away with things like Michael Ford and John Adams if you wrote a good story to go with it.
Yeah,
like you can have some cheesiness in there as long as there's decent writing.
Yeah, this wasn't George Washington and John Adams.
the Conduit story seems like it should be sort of tongue in cheek.
Yeah,
and yet
but it doesn't
it's not.
Feel like it's tongue in cheek.
It's not.
Like, just
no,
the opening
but it
sequence
should be.
Is
I
silly.
I guess it's, if it's boring, it's boring. But, you know, if it's tongue-in-cheek, the way that Perfect Dark was tongue-in-cheek...
Perfect Dark is just tacky. It's just tacky.
Yeah, yeah. That's a good word.
It's trying to be funny, and it's not. And it's just, it's like you get this Jar Jar Binks alien running around.
Wearing a vest.
Really
don't forget he's wearing a vest.
It's British. They don't know.
I just enjoyed the every so often in that game when anytime you walk in there, it was Joanna. It's like, what do you want?
Anyway, enough about the Conduit. It's fun. Swords and Soldiers is a WiiWare game that came out around E3 that we have not talked about at all.
Great reviews, generally.
Yeah, and really deservingly so from what I've played. I'm about halfway through the campaign mode, and I think it's brilliant. It's a real-time strategy game set on a 2D plane, almost like a Mario platformer. That's the presentation of it. So the funny thing is that, you know, all you do is scroll back and forth, left or right. So you're on the left, the bad guy's on the right, your enemies kind of meet in the middle. And it's like, how can this work? How can this be deep enough for a strategy game? And the interesting thing is that you don't really control the units. But yeah, that's the part that would seem boring. If they can only go left or right, then controlling the units would be kind of mundane, right? Well, they just take that part out. So the units just walk forward automatically, and when they run into something, they attack it. So the strategy is not in controlling the units, because they're completely on autopilot. The strategy is which units you build, the build order, the upgrade order for these things. And then also you have some sort of magical powers, basically like things come down from on high. So you can use like your magical powers to kill enemies or poison them or do some things like that. So it's even more indirect than a typical real-time strategy. And all you're doing is building units, and then every now and then you can kind of snipe a dude that you don't like. But other than that, it does it automatically. And yet it feels like you're always busy. It always feels like you're doing so. You're never waiting for anything. It's really interesting, and I think it feels very finely balanced. It has a nice degree of challenge. At first, I thought, man, these missions are almost too difficult too early in the game, and then I just tried a completely different approach to it that worked. So I think it has a very nice level of difficulty, and it seems like there's plenty of content for the $10 or, you know, 1,000 Wii points that they're offering. It feels like there's a lot to do. There's even a couple modes I haven't gotten into yet, and the graphics are great. They're beautiful hand-drawn 2D animation. It just looks almost like something from Vanillaware or something like that.
Wow.
It's very, very pretty. And speaking of story and writing, the story is silly, but the writing is really great. Very clever, very funny. That is very tongue-in-cheek. And I just all around, I think it's a great package, and I think it's one of the best things I've ever gotten for WiiWare. I think it's totally worth your time.
Nice.
I wish it had online play so we could go at it. It has local multiplayer, but not online.
How many WiiWare games have had online?
Pretty much Dr. Mario.
Tetris Party.
That's all I've got. Greg, you are playing games that I do not associate with his Gregness.
I want to mention I've still been playing what I've been doing in the ridiculous heat that's actually over this country at the minute. It is actually warm, and we are not built to deal with this. So the first thing I've still been playing plenty of Planet Puzzle League or Puzzle League DS.
God, I love that game.
On the train and stuff while melting.
Yeah, Mike, I wanted to tell you, you should listen to the previous episode because Greg talks about that game.
Did it just come out over there or something?
No, it was kind of a bit like Tetris DS in that it like disappeared a bit for a while. You know, the way that game was mysteriously difficult to get hold of, but you know, I found it somewhere decent, picked it up. And the thing I just wanted to mention, I didn't mention last week, is that if you're someone like me who hasn't really played the game before, the great thing about the little challenges, the little like puzzle levels that you can go through, is it kind of teaches you how to play the regular game at a higher level in terms of like chaining combos and all this sort of stuff. So it doesn't leave the sort of the depth of the gameplay oblique. It actually introduces it to you in a fun way, which I think is really clever, and it is a really good package. And I'm really glad I picked that up. So now I'll get on to the new stuff. I picked up Guitar Hero Metallica for the Wii, which is my first time owning a Guitar Hero game.
And you picked that enough.
Because I like Metallica a lot.
See, that's the other thing. I wouldn't think Greg as a Metallica fan.
No, but... you can ask Nick DeMolo, who's also a big Metallica fan. We've spoken about to each other quite a lot. But the problem is, you know, I play guitar games in the past with friends or whatever, and it's fun. But, you know, even just by the guitar bundle, you know, it's a pretty high price of entry.
Especially over there, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. You heard all about some of the farces over the years with the pricing of that. Yeah. So it's like, yeah, it's fun. Is it really that fun? You know, there's a lot of tracks I don't really care about on this stuff. You know, it's difficult to say, yeah, I'm going to jump in. But with sort of guitar of Metallica, for me, you've got a lot of songs that you know you're interested in, you know they're going to resonate. So it kind of makes it more justified. And then if you really like the game part, well, then maybe you'll say, well, yeah, having paid that up front, now I'll buy, you know, maybe Guitar Hero 5 when that comes out, and maybe you'll get into DLC, maybe you'll buy the drums. You know, this is how they get you.
Yeah, that's how addiction starts.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of like a tailor-made introduction to Guitar Hero for me. And I think the good thing about Metallica songs is to play is that they are interesting in the sense that they're kind of dynamic and fast and stuff. Whereas, you know, some
really
of the...
fast.
I mean, with some of the... Not as fast as Slayer. Jesus. Well. Oh, God. That just gives me more reason to hate them. That song is impossible for me. I'm like barely getting proficient.
What difficulty are you playing on?
I'm just playing normal at the minute. Okay. I haven't got to the 5 fret button stage. That scares the hell out of me.
It should with Metallica songs, because that's
God, that looks terrifying.
I mean, I can on a typical Guitar Hero, I can play hard, but when it comes to like Metallica, most heavy metal stuff, I have to go back down to medium. It's just too fast and crazy.
I mean, I'd like to think I could work my way up to it eventually, but you know, it's probably take quite a while. It's kind of cool when I've been listening to Metallica since I was a little kid, basically. So you know, it's kind of a nice kind of nostalgia kind of thing, almost sort of remembering like, oh god, yeah, this solo is really crazy, isn't it? Oh shit, I've got to play it. it was really fun like that. And so some of the other supporting bands, you've got some cool stuff that I like on there, like System of a Down, Mastodon, Caius, one of the more Foo Fighters songs that's not totally bland, you know. So there's stuff to like on there. Also, you do play some, and it's like, yeah, this is why I'm glad it's Guitar Hero Metallica, because some songs are just really boring in Guitar Hero, aren't they? You know, so
occasionally.
But it's as fun as I expected it to be. I also played a bit of co-op because a mate of mine picked it up as well. He played the bass mostly. So it's cool the way you can play different difficulties. So you can kind of tailor it that way. So, yeah, it's really cool. I mean, I doubt I'll ever be playing that online, even though it has it. Much as you said, I kind of agree with that. I don't really see the point too much, to be honest. We'll see whether it's value enough for money that I'll end up going deeper with Guitar Hero, but it was worth getting for me, I think.
Well, the other games are actually, the main series games are actually a better value because they have usually about twice as many songs for the same price. And for you, it would be cheaper because now you wouldn't have to buy the guitar.
Yeah, exactly. Well, that's the thing now. It's like, if I'm really into the game itself, I could do that. And then there's DLC on other games, all sorts of stuff if you really get into it. Mm-hmm. I've also got, just today, Tiger Woods 10 with the Wii Motion Plus bundle. And that's, you know, I just played through a tutorial, played through a few holes, went straight to the sort of quote-unquote advanced controls that are with the Wii Motion Plus. And seems to play really well, intuitive, and I think it feels a lot more satisfying than the way Tiger Woods games played in the past, or I guess as they still do on 360 and PS3 with the analog stick flicking thing, because...
Right.
Yeah, that never sounded very appealing.
I just kind of found that difficult to screw up. Too difficult to screw up.
It works fine as a side thing when you're punching a football in Madden, but... as the entire mechanic of a game, it does not stand up.
It doesn't really kind of sync up that well with the actual thing that you're supposed to be doing, I don't think, you know. And the second thing is, you know, an analog stick, it has a natural sort of center to it. You know, it's not really like you can screw it up that badly. So I just never felt like there was the same kind of risk-rewards things going on there that there is, like, even with the old timing-based system where if you miss the mark a bit, you know, it'll slice off.
Or even, like, the trackball in Golden Tee. I mean, that thing is a, you know, there's enough play to it that you can easily get a strong hooker slice without trying to. So that's a little more natural.
Whereas with this, I mean, you play Wii Motion Plus, it is so much based on, you know, your swing itself that, you know, clearly you're not just bound to swing straight, as I quickly discovered. You know, because, I mean, when you put it on advanced, you know, the draw and fade is applied by, you know, how, the sort of inclination of the Wii Remote as you swing through. And mm-hmm. I've just found that naturally I just swing with a bunch of draw all the time. I'm going to have to wean myself off, otherwise I'll be kind of like the players in Mario Golf that always draw or whatever. I will be Bowser.
You already are.
Buddy.
Just so far, it seems really, really good. I like the putting. I like everything about it early on. I mean, apparently the career mode's got loads of content and all that. I mean, it sounds like it's a pretty good package. Nice to get Wii Motion Plus on the go as well. And as you can tell, Guitar Hero a bit ago, Tiger Woods today, 3 weeks from now, Wii Sports Resort. That is a lot to spend.
Yes, that is a lot of money.
The conduit got kicked here. It was going to launch in the same week as where it was in the US. For some reason, it got delayed at the very last minute to between Tiger and Wii Sports Resort, which has kind of imperiled its purchase for me at the minute.
Well, it is good, and I'm happy I got the conduit, but I'm still behind on a bunch of things. I want to pick up Boomblock's Bash Party. I even traded in the first one in anticipation of picking up the sequel, and that's just, I haven't gotten around to it.
Boxart hasn't got his mind yet.
No, that is something I really want to get for sure, because that seems like it's going to be great.
It's been a really busy summer in terms of good releases.
Especially for a summer,
worthwhile.
You know, yeah, definitely.
All right, well, that's a pretty damn short new business for you guys, especially with five people here.
Yeah, it is. Wow.
We're moving along at a brisk pace, and we'll be back in a minute with a very unusual news roundup segment.
Oh,
so.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe Mike has brought the latest on Uwe Boll for us. We will see. All right. We'll be back in a sec.
Professor, what's a diabolical box?
Well, Luke, do you remember sharing a bathroom with your sister when you were very young?
No, Professor. I have a tendency to block out traumatic memories.
Well, Luke, boys and girls are very different. They might look the same when wearing clothes, but underneath, there are special parts for each. We have different terms for these parts. For example, you might say that boys have sticks and girls have boxes.
I think I've got it! But Professor, what does diabolical mean?
Well, Luke, a diabolical box is one who takes all your money to buy expensive shoes.
Oh, now it all makes sense. Thank you, Professor.
That's why I'm here. Oh, and Luke, I am your father.
All right, welcome back, Cotter. We got some news.
Mr. Cotter!
It's time for the news roundup with Mike Sklens. Go!
There's news, but I don't care about any of it since I don't touch my Nintendo shit. Did you completely forget that I have always been the resident Nintendo hater on this podcast?
No. But you bring your own style and sensibility and charm.
Charm, is that what it's called?
Yeah.
No, that's what they're going to say about you when this thing goes live.
But Mike, if you're gonna start being endearing, you need to get going.
Oh no, I've never been endearing. I've been the lovable asshole. That's my role here.
But anyway, we don't do news very often, and some of these stories are not breaking. They might be a couple weeks old, but we haven't talked about them, so we want to catch up on a couple
news
things
in years. So it's worth doing now.
We wanted to catch up on a few stories that we thought would be worth discussing and might get your ears perked up a little bit here. And first on the list, I have the Metroid. And by the way, Greg pulled up these for the most part. But the Metroid Prime trilogy, we found out a little bit more about it. There was this box art that leaked I'm not sure if it leaked or if it just showed up somewhere. It looked really crappy, and people were very worried about the packaging for this game. And turned out that was not the real box art, and the real box art is awesome.
Yeah, it's that nice steelbook case.
Yeah,
it's going to come in this metal tin with beautiful packaging and art book, and it's labeled as like the Metroid Prime Trilogy Limited Special Edition or whatever, but that's the only edition there is. So everybody who buys this is getting the awesome version.
It's the special edition.
It's the special edition in that they are all in the one case. You didn't just get some duct tape of your GameCube games and the third one and then just wrap it up.
It's special in that if you bought Metroid Prime 3 and you never had the other two games, you're buying it again now.
It's special in that they're making you take the good with the bad.
There are no bad games.
There are no bad games.
You can't just buy Metroid Prime. You have to buy the other two with it.
Wow, you are smoking some crack.
Now,
You've changed, man.
I probably went on forever about Metroid Prime 3 Corruption on this podcast back when it first came out. That game was a piece of crap. It's not even a Metroid game.
Do not agree at all.
Harsh words, harsh words.
Mike raises an interesting point, of course, because Metroid Prime 1 and 2 were released as part of the new Play Control series in Japan separately.
Yes.
Whereas we're getting them as a full price retail game.
How much are they charging for the 3-pack?
It's 50.
Well, I mean, that's not bad. I mean, Nintendo
for three games with awesome packaging.
Nintendo doesn't drop prices on their games ever, so I'm pretty sure Metroid Prime 3 is probably still $50.
Probably.
Actually going
it's
to
still
cost
worth
more
10
now.
Or 12 trade-ins, so that's what I did. That way I won't have two copies of it. I don't need two copies of it.
Watch your game save's not going to work. Damn it!
I don't care if it does. I was going to play through it again anyway. Actually, I lost my game save when I had to get my Wii
Remote. Replaced, yeah. But I mean, the point is, I mean, for anyone here, well, first of all, should we do a poll? Who's getting this?
Oh, I'm totally getting this.
I'm 50-50 on it.
Mike's getting it. He'll decide later that he's getting it.
I'm not.
Now, Greg, has this been confirmed for European release?
Yes, it has been actually.
Okay, good.
It's coming out about 10 days after America, so all good.
Well, that's not bad.
Oh, and to answer your question, yes, the MSRP of Metroid Prime 3 is $49.99.
Well, at least it's a good deal.
Yeah, well, it's funny because Nintendo doesn't have any kind of player's choice program for Wii.
It's odd. I figured they would have showed it at E3 this year.
Well, I mean, there was not a whole lot to say about it. It exists. Look at this.
Yeah. Everybody knows all the games, I mean.
So it's a good deal, I guess, but if you were someone that were only interested in playing through the original Metroid Prime, let's say, with the new controls,
then you're screwed.
Would you prefer to have bought that for $30?
Well, yeah, I can understand some angst on the part of people who only wanted one of the games. But at the same time, I mean, I think the fact that they're releasing in really nice packaging kind of makes up for that a little bit.
Yeah, I think that's some of the reason
why. The packaging makes it
as long as you're
better.
A nerd, I suppose.
It's not worth $20, but it helps a little. Yeah, I'm hoping that people like Mike, who maybe didn't get the other games a chance and talk out of their ass about them.
Metroid Prime is excellent. Metroid Prime 2 is 90% as good as Metroid Prime 1. It just drags on for too long, and it does that light dark thing, and it's just.
I'm not going to argue with 90%. I mean, that's totally fair.
And Metroid Prime 3 is down to 80%. It gets rid of the light dark thing, but it's completely linear. There's almost no actual exploration.
So you and I actually agree on these games, except I know how to avoid hyperbole.
I've never been good at that.
See, and I have that whole order reversed of 3 is clearly the superior game to the other two.
3 has the best controls, hands down.
Definitely has the best controls.
It's just that it's too linear and too easy. The final boss, I think I beat it on the first try.
Yeah, I don't even remember the final boss.
I don't even either. It's completely unmemorable.
Well, no, it's just the Aurora unit, Dark Samus.
Oh, yeah. It was really easy.
It was crazy easy.
It's rock solid on hard.
I remember when I beat it, I thought, oh, okay, well, I guess it's going to mutate into some new form now. And it was just like, no, you did it. You won. And I was like, what?
No, that's the thing. If you play it on hard, it just goes on too long because everything's adjusted, so it takes a million hits. It's the exact opposite problem. It's just ridiculous.
I'm actually looking forward to going back. And I've never really been one to go back and play the Metroid games on hard modes. But I'm looking forward to doing it this case because with the first two, now that they've upgraded the controls to the Wii style, I feel probably I'll be able to handle on hard without so much frustration. So
yeah, but I mean, Metroid Prime 2 on hard was very hard indeed.
Oh, well, even on normal it was pretty difficult.
Yeah, that is a tough game.
I also think there was a little too much resource management in Metroid Prime 2. with all that light and dark. It's
in some ways it was inconsequential for the most part, except when it was consequential, it was only bad. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, you know, it was just a matter of inconvenience.
If it was worth noting, it was a pain in the ass.
Yeah, I think it was just a bit silly. But I mean, the first one is the one I really, really want to play through again because I haven't played through it in 6 years.
It's fantastic.
Whereas I think Metroid Prime 2 I played through 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I had widescreen and I've just got a much better television now, audiovisual in general.
Yeah, that'll be a big thing now that I've got my widescreen. Yeah, that's going to be really cool.
Yeah, so that's that part of it, I think. And the controls as well is definitely... I remember having a particularly hard time with the controls in Metroid Prime because I had it and Time Splitters 2 at the same time.
Ooh,
and alternated between the two. So it's like, I wanted to use dual analog sometimes. I wanted to lock on when I was playing Time Splitters. You know, yeah. That was a bad decision. No, definitely.
Well, I'm pretty excited to pick this up, even though they're all old games. I mean, they're all awesome.
See, for whatever reason... I was just never big on the Prime franchise until 3. So I would get bored with them at some point and just sort of stop playing. Whereas 3, I felt like it was exciting enough.
Well, that's kind of the flip side of what Mike's talking about with the more linearity,
yeah,
isn't it?
Yeah, it keeps you going easily. It
it's
keeps
more
you
focused
engaged,
and it's more, yeah, it's more focused. And
I'm sure that's what they're going for with it.
I've seen something to commend for it. And when it's the third game, doing something a wee bit different, there's nothing wrong with that in my book. Because the first one was so good. I mean, it's difficult to just do that again.
Yeah, I mean, I never finished the second game because I just got bored
of
it.
I didn't either.
No. Well, most people didn't finish the second game. And it's too bad because I think the stuff towards the end is by far the best part of the game.
Yeah.
Apart from the key stuff.
The key hunt, it's better than in the first game.
It is better than in the first one, but it's still...
The third one is where they really finally kind of solve that issue.
Yeah, exactly. They should have just skipped to that in the second one.
Yeah. They probably hadn't thought of it yet, but...
Yeah.
But the second one, I mean, the final region of the game, the Sanctuary Fortress, is... unbelievable.
That's
environment.
Great.
It not only does it look amazing, but it's the best designed. It's the fun. It's the most fun to go through. It's the most challenging and interesting to explore. And then also you get the coolest weapons like the Annihilator and the Echo Visor and the Screw Attack. It's like that's when the game really starts to feel different than the first Metroid Prime. That's where you start to get into the new upgrades that weren't rehashes. And man, it just gets so awesome. And unfortunately, a lot of people never get past the boost ball guardian because it's just unbalanced.
The pointer controls are not going to help with that.
Nope, they're not.
No.
Which one? What was the boost ball guardian? I don't remember.
It's the one where you're in the morph ball and it's sort of like ooze on the floor at times, and you have to lay little bombs and catch it, and then it has the boost ball, so it's zipping around and
I don't remember that.
It is extremely difficult.
And
I think
so
they've
hard.
Pretty much admitted that they didn't balance it right. You know, they
no,
know
that is because it's not even that far in the game. I mean,
no,
it's
pretty early on, and it's just a real shame if you never got past that point. I really hope you're going to pick up the trilogy and give it another shot because the game gets much better after that, and it never gets that hard again.
So no, I don't think
if you
it
could
does.
But you just push on through that point, and you're really going to have a great time with it after that. You just grit your teeth and bear it. Go to a strategy guide. Do whatever you have to do to get past that boss, and you're gonna be glad you did.
Now I kind of want to plug it back in and play it again.
Yeah, so do I.
Oh, see? I'm totally working my magic on you. I'm a professional. This is what I do.
Also, I mean, the one other thing we should say about it, where it's slotting in late August, there's not that much from Nintendo. This is kind of filling a pretty big void in terms of first-party stuff on Wii, because then you're just talking about New Super Mario Brothers after December or late November probably or whatever. So this is kind of it.
Well, Beatles Rock Band will be out in September, very, very, very beginning.
I'm talking about the first party perspective
from Nintendo. Yeah,
Nintendo's fall lineup is
it's obvious because no one buys non-Nintendo games for Nintendo consoles.
It is important to kind of break down how they're spacing things out, and then after Wii Sports Resort, I mean, there's lots of good DS stuff, that's not a problem, but in terms of Wii stuff, it's kind of, the Metroid Prime is like the trilogy, even though it's a re-release, is like the game between Wii Sports and Mario Brothers, so it is a kind of a big deal in that sense.
Hey, no, Greg, you're now eligible to play Beatles Rock Band on your Wii. You've got your guitar,
you get
the bare minimum. So you can sing those songs in something similar to the original accent.
No, I'm not.
Not that similar,
I am
actually.
I'm not a Scouser by any stretch of the imagination.
I'm just joshing you. All right. So Retro Game Challenge. There's a very interesting interview with XSEED recently at Silicon Era. And it wasn't an interview about Retro Game Challenge, but the topic came up, among other things. And the director of publishing, who would seem like the guy who would make such decisions, kind of said that the odds of localizing the sequel are very unlikely, not good for America, for English-speaking audiences, I guess. And, you know, this is something I mentioned a couple weeks ago when I said I had been playing through it some more and people should go buy it because it's like... total the sleeper hit of the year for me already. And this guy from XSEED kind of said that he would need to get a dramatic increase in sales in order to get over 100,000 copies. And he pretty much said that we'd have to sell 100,000 copies in order to make it viable for us to do the sequel. And, you know, that's just a return on investment or whatever. But it obviously hasn't sold nearly that many so far, which is... just makes my heart bleed.
It's a game that I was interested in, but I think when it came out, it was like almost $40. So
it should be 30.
Yeah, I'm looking now, and it's pretty much 30 everywhere now.
Yeah, I mean, Mike, you should really pick this up. You would love it. You've been playing games long enough to really get where this game's coming from. And the reason that I really wanted to bring this up is I had this idea. I think it was this morning. I was barely awake, and I started thinking about the show and what we were going to talk about. And I started thinking, you know, not that I have any influence over this, but it'd be great if a company like XSEED, you know, when they're looking at what can they publish, what's financially responsible for them to localize and publish, it'd be great if they could use something like DSiWare as a way to bring over games like this that aren't really viable in the traditional publishing market. I mean, Retro Game Challenge 2, as it would be called, I guess, is kind of a unique situation because it's very clearly broken into chunks
divisible,
in the game that are fairly small on their own. It seems reasonable that you could localize these one at a time and release them on a platform like DSiWare where you have much less publishing overhead cost and do it that way. And it kind of fills this perceived vacuum of there lacking a virtual console kind of selection for DSiWare. Now you kind of say, hey, if you want to play these kind of old school games on your DSi, download this stuff, you know?
Well, and I guess, I mean, if you were in that scenario cutting out a lot of the kind of overarching stuff that goes on, because you're releasing the component game separately, that would eliminate a lot of the localization costs, surely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is kind of sad. You're losing a certain amount of the charm.
I mean,
that
stuff is charming and it's fun, but I'm more concerned about playing the games than I am with getting that full experience. I would, you know, I'd be sad about that loss, but I'd be much happier that I'd be playing the game at all.
Yeah.
And I haven't played the sequel, so I don't know which games are good, which ones aren't. But I mean, if it's anything like the first one, I would say you could totally charge $5 for most of these games, and people would not feel gypped at all. I think most of these are right in that $5 price range. And then the RPG, you know, you could totally sell that for $10. I mean, it's going to be a 10 or 15 hour long game. It's also going to require the most localization effort. So it seems very fair to charge $10 for that. I think, can you imagine people putting an RPG on DSiWare? People would shit their pants right now.
You know, they'd probably make
compared
more money
to the other stuff that's on
putting
there.
It on the iPhone, even. Mm-hmm. You could. I mean, you have to completely redo it for a touchscreen, though. So
yeah, the controls, that wouldn't work so well. But I mean, I think for DSiWare,
old school games.
I doubt this is being considered. It would require a fair bit of programming to chop it up and redo it. But I just wanted to throw out the idea.
Well,
it seems like the kind
of
thing.
How successful DSiWare has been, either.
Yeah, I guess.
Yeah,
yeah,
but
they'll never release numbers for it.
I don't know.
So.
I just see. It seems like this kind of stuff could be more successful than a lot of the other crap they're putting on DSiWare.
Well, yeah, but
it's something different. It's not Puzzle Game X, and it's not Calculator 5000.
Yeah, the are there two calculators now?
At least
there's like three or four.
Mario.
Oh, that's right. Yeah,
just a bunch of clocks, just awful stuff.
Oh yeah, the clocks.
If you think that's a problem on DSiWare, you should see the 500 tip calculators available in the App Store.
Well, it's funny because at E3 there was a guy walking around with the DSi and Nintendo's booth, just showing you random ass apps. Like,
yeah,
you would just
really.
Like grab, look at this, and it was just like some fucking clock with Mario on it. I'm like,
that's awful.
I would have punched that guy in the face if he'd done that to me. Dude, get that fucking clock out of my face.
Before
I kill you.
If he'd had the Tingle apps, then you would have been.
Oh.
But the funny thing was, he used a different app every day. So like, I went by another time. This app translates text into German. I'm like, fuck.
So does Google, and it's free. So
yeah.
Bring me back my fucking clocks.
Yeah. Well, Greg just mentioned the Tingle stuff. I don't have it in the show notes here, but you want to mention that real quick?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Yeah, that's it. In Japan, there is a sort of suite of Tingle-related apps.
Sweet.
Oh, my God.
Sweet spelled
many
different ways,
too. It includes, like, fortune-telling, coin-flipping. Yeah, but that's pretty bizarre. So I guess, you know, if you prefer your apps sort of funky, you can go that way. And they're doing a sequel to the RPG adventure game that didn't come out in America, but it did come out in Europe. Rosie Rupee Land, or whatever it's called.
Sweet.
So there you go. You can look forward to not getting that in America as well.
Yes!
Well, if you want to read some really...
Wait.
There's a... Carly Jung wrote a great review, she wrote a great review of the English, and I by English I mean English version of the Tingle game for DS, the first one. And
oh,
that
I wanted
is
to play
an,
that so bad.
That is an interesting review. I recommend that you check it out. That game, even after reading the review, I'm not sure if I understand what the hell it's about, but it's really funny. So, the next story we have, there's a brand new Final Fantasy game coming to DS. It's funny because it apparently runs on the Crystal Chronicles engine, and is, you know, possibly kind of made by the same people. And also, it's called The Four Warriors of Light. So it sounds like a multiplayer game. So I was surprised when I didn't read anything about that in the articles that I found. But I'm really excited about this. They're making a brand new Final Fantasy. They're calling it Final Fantasy Gaiden. But it's a brand new Final Fantasy RPG specifically for DS that is not Crystal Chronicles. It's more of the old style. You know, so it looks more like FF3 and FF4. And I guess the upcoming Final Fantasy Legends 2 that they're remaking also.
Right.
So it looks like those games, but I guess it's made in-house at Square, not by Matrix. But coming out this fall in Japan, and nice graphics and pretty interesting. The logo is four little super deformed kids riding on the back of a dragon. Which is, I don't know. That just
perfect.
Sparked something
for a minute about
deep
how
inside of me.
The original Crystal Chronicles was, as long as you had all the shit to play it.
It is amazing
it is
if you have
so
four people and
fucking good. Yeah. I was probably in my top three or four multiplayer games of all time. It's that good.
Yeah, it is incredibly fun for sure.
If only for the shouting matches that you inevitably get in with all of your friends over who's going to be stuck carrying the bucket and who gets to use like the good spells.
Yeah. Well, it has that nice Nintendo style merge of cooperation and competitiveness.
Yeah, it's the perfect blend of we have to get to the end of the level, but I'm really going to try to dick you all over in the process.
Right. And it kind of declares a winner at the end.
Yes.
And the winner actually matters because the treasure that everybody collects is sort of divvied up by who won.
Yeah, that's an interesting point because that's something that people talked about with New Super Mario Brothers, isn't it? Is that it declares a winner as well, like, but it doesn't really seem to make much difference, or it didn't.
You win. Congratulations.
Yeah, nobody I think cares. It's in Mario it's more for bragging rights, but
I wonder if I guess if you're playing the game for real, whereas not in the demo version, like I'm assuming, you know, you'll go to like the overworld map or maybe it affects stuff like kind of outside the levels or something, you know?
Yeah, it could be.
Maybe, because otherwise it does seem a little superfluous.
Zelda Four Swords did that too, and that game got pretty close to the amount of awesome that Crystal Chronicles was, but it's not quite there.
Oh, yeah.
It's funny because in Crystal Chronicles, you actually had to play with at least two people to beat the game. I mean, you physically could not beat it yourself, because I think
because you tried, right?
I did try because I had people to play it with, but I would get bored waiting for the opportunity to play it with them again. So
it's not even fun by yourself.
I'd make
awful by yourself. It's bad.
It's not terrible. It's average. I would
as good as it is with four people. It's that bad with one person.
We've had at this point two Crystal Chronicles games for DS. We've had already released two Final Fantasy remakes for DS and another on the way. And now this brand new Final Fantasy, and of course all the Dragon Quest stuff, multiple Dragon Quest remakes, as well as
Crystal
the upcoming...
Bears that hasn't been come out yet, right?
That's for Wii. I'm just saying...
Oh,
I'm just really impressed at the number of DS games that Square is putting out there. And although there are a lot of remakes, the remakes are very, very good. And there's also a lot of original games. And, I mean, they must be selling, like, Echoes of Time seem like, you know, the weird thing that you could play on Wii and DS and play them against each other.
Versions.
Like, that seems very niche and bizarre to me, and I never really got the appeal of it, but, like, you gotta think that stuff must be selling pretty well, that they're continuing to pump out more and more and more of these, and these are not cheap games to make at all.
They're spending a lot of money for a DS game.
These are really high production value games, so... And it is really interesting that, you know, Square, I mean, you just remember all the shit that they had to go through to make games for GBA back in the day. And just with DS, they are cranking it out. I mean, I think they're putting out more games for DS than any other platform. And you might even argue they're putting out better games for DS.
That's where all the money is.
This is almost like a third line of Final Fantasy games on DS, isn't it? Like you said, because you've had Crystal Chronicles and then you've had the remake line. But, I mean, do you think this is in lieu of Final Fantasy 5 or 6 being remade? Or
they'll make it eventually.
I think those are being made.
Yeah, I think they will too.
Well, part of the problem is that Matrix Software, who made the 3 and 4 remakes, they're now making Legend 2 for whatever reason. That's kind of bizarre.
Yeah.
That's not even really a Final Fantasy game. That's something else. But it's a saga game. But, you know, those guys, because of the great work that they did on Final Fantasy 3 and 4, have gotten busy with making other games for other people. So, like, there's one coming out from Ignition, I believe, called Nostalgia.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's coming out in America this fall, and that is, you know, like, kind of a Skies of Arcadia.
Oh my god, I love that game.
It looks great.
It looks really good. From what I saw at
E3,
that is an old-style hardcore RPG. I mean, that is about as old-school as a game gets.
I wish I still had my copy of Skies of Arcadia Legends.
That's why it's called Nostalgia, James.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, Matrix has gotten busy with all these other projects now because of their expertise in this field, so it could be that they just don't have time to make things like FF5 remake right now.
And
I hope they do.
They aren't the lead developer on Nostalgia. They developed the visual engine. But still, I mean, that's a pretty substantial undertaking from the looks of it.
Yeah, probably.
And it's a huge game from what I was able to observe. So
I'm excited for that game. I watched the video that we put up, and I thought it looked great.
Is the point where I swore at the guy who was showing it in there?
I don't know. By the way, speaking of video, this came up in an email, and we haven't done anything about it yet, but... Aaron Kaluska took a ton of direct feed video at E3, and it's really, really great footage. We haven't done anything with it on our website yet, but it is on the YouTube channel. So if you go to YouTube and search for Nintendo World Report, all one word, you'll find our channel page, and all these amazing E3 videos that he took are up there, and you could spend hours going through some of these. I mean, we have really, really good footage of stuff like the Grinder, which is going to be the follow-up to the Conduit from High Voltage. That is a very impressive-looking game. I'm way more excited about it now that I've watched our video. And it's really good quality video. So if you're looking to catch up on some E3 games and, you know, see some of that stuff, you should really go check that out. It's good, good, good footage. All right, well, moving on to the next story. There's been a lot of speculation lately as to, you know, how well these mature games and these sort of hardcore games are doing on Wii. Sega's been publishing quite a few of them so far in 2009, including, of course, The Conduit, which is T-rated, but it's supposedly a hardcore game. And, you know, there's a lot of concern, gnashing of teeth over how these games are selling. Mad World, we heard bad things about that game sales. And, you know, wondering, like, is this going to end very soon? Like, is this an experiment that kind of failed? And Sega recently in an interview said they're still interested. They said House of the Dead Overkill was profitable, or has become profitable in the long term, at least.
Yeah.
They're saying Mad World did not do well for them, but it's okay. They just chalk it up to, you know, that's a risk we took. It's okay.
I feel bad for not playing that game.
No, you shouldn't, because they didn't even bother to put good in a progressive
scan.
Yeah, if you can't even put that in, you deserve no pity.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, Tiger 10 still doesn't have 60 hertz over here.
For shame.
I didn't play House of the Dead Overkill either, and I was actually kind of interested in House of the Dead Overkill.
It's on my Gamefly list. Like, it not the kind of game I would buy,
right?
But I am excited to play it.
But if I get it, I want to go and pick up two of those Nyko Perfect Shot guns for it.
Oh, perfect shot.
So, Mike, I would say skip Mad World. Don't feel bad about that. It's way overrated. But you should check out The Conduit. I think you might like The Conduit. It's really good.
I'll check it out. I enjoyed it at PAX last year.
The book's still kind of very much open on how well The Conduit's going to do, and I would have thought that would have at least something to do with what Sega or even other publishers are going, kind of attitude they're going to take.
I'm curious when we're going to have a real idea of how that's going to do in the end, though.
Yeah, I mean, are weekly sales posted anywhere?
It's hard to say. I mean, MPD only does, like, top 10 numbers. And,
yeah.
You don't get the long tail out of that.
We can see top 10 by system, right? So...
Yeah.
But, of course, it was released in 23rd of June, so it had a week month. Well,
it always seems like that's the way sometimes. The game comes out the last week of the month, and then...
Yeah, no, that's true.
Everybody's like, it sold terrible! And... Well, it was only out for a week.
I think if it sells well, Sega will come out and say so.
That you're right about that. Definitely someone will be all congratulatory.
Well, I think they could come out and say it sold well, even if it just sold average, though.
Well, maybe well
it
enough.
It sold a lot better than first-party stuff like Excitebots or Wariland.
I can almost guarantee it's going to sell better than Excitebots.
It seems that way, doesn't it?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, that's the whole thing. I mean, I just kind of gauge just sort of from my... general, you know, observing of, you know, people on the forums and stuff. I mean, I know that, you know, James has it, Johnny, you have it, I have it. I know several people on the forums that have it. I mean, it's sold pretty well. I mean, it's sold to a good amount of people that frequent our site.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's all anecdotal, but you got to think the people who go to our site are the prime audience for this. I mean, these are the people who better buy it. If these guys don't buy it, who is, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
true. But I mean, I think that's what John's sort of pointing out is that you couldn't say the same thing about someone like Wariland.
You couldn't say that about Excitebots, really. A lot of people I know didn't buy Excitebot. Nobody I know bought Retro Game Challenge, even though I told them to.
Well, I mean, it's a shame that isn't out in Europe because, you know, with the exchange rate situation, it's been quite expensive to import things now.
Yeah,
it'd be a lot cheaper if it was actually out here. I would have got it otherwise, but I still hope to get it down the line for sure. But
Greg, I'll ship you my copy. I'll let you borrow
it. I'll take it.
I want to hear your thoughts on it. It's worth it to me to hear.
Yeah, and you know how much I love old games. So, I mean,
exactly.
But you know, I mean, with this issue, it's just, you know, what John says. You know, might sound kind of trivial when you're talking about our community, but I think Wariland didn't sell that disastrously. It says it sold somewhere over 100,000 copies or something, and yet among our community, it's not something that everyone picked up. I think, you know, it seems like there is a greater percentage of people actually picking up sort of like The Conduit. It doesn't have a Nintendo character in
it. Well, and The Conduit also doesn't have to overcome the stigma about people thinking it's not worth full price. And
I'm watching this grinder footage right now, that's why I've been quiet, and this is like, I can't believe how good this looks for a Wii game. And this is like early footage.
Right.
That game was, I think, when the direct feed we had, I think they said they were 3 months into development.
And I mean, I guess they're obviously running on the same engine with some upgrades, but
yeah, they are.
This looks really good. I really like the whole like film grain grindhouse effect they got going for it.
The stage they showed was kind of weird because it was all the same enemies at that point.
Yeah, these little like vampires. So
like they look like aliens with pointy teeth.
They look like the vampires from I Am Legend with little scythes on their hands.
That game's gonna be. Just from hearing the guy who was showing the games describing it, that game's going to be irritating because all the enemies can fucking teleport behind you.
Well, there is a 180 degree spin in the Conduit.
Yeah, I know.
I'm sure
it'll
be in the...
But you have to know they're back there.
Yeah. Well, that game, just watching the trailer, what excited me is not just the graphical upgrades, which are already evident, but you can already tell that they've learned a lot about the level design, the way that the enemies come at you, the pace of the action, the number of enemies that attack you at any given time. I mean, the kinds of weapons that you get. You can already tell that they've learned a lot from making the Conduit, and that they're already improving that. So for me, it was the design stuff I saw that got me really
excited.
That
was actually the big focus of his presentation for the grinder, was what they've learned.
Mm-hmm. And not to say that these things are really bad in the Conduit, but like they're clearly areas where there's some improvement to be made.
Well, in the Conduit, there were obvious places in that game where I was like, well, they just really don't have much experience.
Yeah.
Really, probably even playing first person shooters, to be honest with you, because there was some stuff in there.
Like, there was 8.5.
The thing is, there were stupid things. Well, yeah, but I mean, the thing is, there were also very good parts in that game too that kind of brought the score up, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And where I docked that game wasn't so much with the multiplayer. It was more in the single player campaign. But there were stupid things like you can go around on the walls and use the ASE to decode things on the walls. And you would only save those at checkpoints. So you would go through an area and, you know, decode these things on the walls. And if you died, you would have to go through and decode them all again if you wanted to get credit for them. Like, just annoying things like that, where it's just
trivial,
like,
annoyance, yeah.
Yes, trivial annoyances, but all over, like, there was stuff like that. And it's just kind of like, all right, guys, you know, it's pretty obvious that, you know, they'll read the reviews. Because it's stuff it's not stuff that isn't fixable, right? It's just kind of oversights.
Mm-hmm. You think Sega will be interested in publishing something like The Grinder?
I almost wonder from talking to them, if they might almost be inclined to get someone else to publish it, not because of a bad experience with Sega, but just to, you know, they seem to be really interested in doing different things every time, so maybe just for the...
So looking at House of the Dead Overkill, I mean, it has very much a similar vibe to The Grinder.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It does. And
so Sega might look at that and say, well, maybe we can, you know, maybe we can sell this one again, or they think it kind of competes with our own title.
I guess the biggest difference is just that, you know, the whole rail shooter thing is a pretty crowded field on Wii, whereas, you know, this sort of Left 4 Dead style gameplay is not nearly so much so. Even though the kind of atmosphere and the sort of superficial stuff is kind of similar, they might feel that, you know, it's a very different kind of game. It probably appeal to different people, maybe, or more people, hopefully, I'm sure they would think. Because I think the problem with railgun games is, like you kind of alluded to, Johnny, you know, a lot of people are skeptical that they'd get their full price value out of it, you know, whereas something that could be a sort of, you know, perennial kind of co-op multiplayer, you know, I mean, if anything that you hear about the sort of the lasting appeal of what people say about Left 4 Dead, if it could get anywhere near that, you know, then people will get their money's worth out of it, so.
Yeah, and did you notice in the menu for that Grinder video that they've already at least, you know, put out a place for split screen?
Yes.
So that was like one of the big complaints of the conduit. It doesn't have split screen. It's like, I already got that fixed. We're already taking care of that for the next game.
The other big thing they discussed with respect to the Grinder was they kept talking about the clone system, which you had alluded to earlier, although you may not have realized it, in the number of enemies that are on screen. So one of their tricks is they have identical enemies on screen so they can squeeze more of them on there. But they said that they should be able to hide it if they implement the system. So basically, every game, they're going to use this engine now. They're going to add some weird-ass feature.
That was the one thing with the conduit. You could tell that there weren't many enemies on screen, usually.
Yeah.
They tried to hide it, but it was you know, if you kind of watched...
Yeah, I mean, that is an interesting point, because one of the things that I think about, you know, the whole Wii pointer control for first-person shooters is that it should allow you to be able to target, you know, multiple enemies much more quickly, and therefore...
But there aren't multiple enemies to target.
Yeah, that's what I say. You know, you would like it to be that it's a much more sort of fast-paced kind of thing than your average console shooter, because you're not having to steer a cursor. It's all like what I've talked about with the upgrade from Sin and Punishment 1 to Sin and Punishment 2, but applied to a first-person shooter. But if you haven't got the horsepower to actually generate that many enemies, then that advantage... Yeah. isn't fully exploited, which is, I think, why when you've seen the response to the conduit, not everyone has really seen the benefit, or is at least sort of seemed to recognize that there is a benefit to having these more sort of responsive Wii controls. So if they're getting more towards that with the Grinder, I think then they might really be hitting more pay dirt with the Wii controls.
All right, so the last story I have on here is GTA Chinatown Wars going over to PSP. Now, I don't know. I mean, do you guys care? Does this surprise anybody?
It seemed inevitable. I mean,
it seems like they're gonna have to really redo it though a lot.
It depends on what they decide to do with it. If they decide they're gonna cheap out and reuse the existing engine, they're gonna have to remake the whole game, their existing PSP engine. Mm-hmm. If they decide they're just gonna do it like a top down perspective game like they did for the DS game,
I think they're gonna use the DS engine. That's what
I think. I think if they don't do that, so they don't make it third person in the way that the Blank City stories are, I think they're going to alienate people who bought those games.
But, I mean, don't you think you're talking about this as if it's happening now? In all likelihood, they had already planned for this contingency.
Yeah, I know. I'm just curious what they're going to do.
They probably... The point is, when they were developing the DS game, they probably already had the sort of shadow PSP development process going on. And therefore, they're not building the PSP game from scratch because they already built it.
I wouldn't be surprised if they did something like do all the textures at a higher resolution for PSP and then knowing that they would put that out and then downsample them all for the DS version.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it was probably a unified development process to begin with, and this was all part of the plan. I don't think it's necessarily a response to any kind of perceived lackluster sales so much on the DS. I mean, maybe it has underperformed for them, I don't know, but I don't really think this is a discretionary action related to that. It's just, they think this is going to maximize their sales overall because, as James has mentioned, there were previous GTA games on PSP. It has an established sort of fan base there. And, because GTA, the Chinatown Wars is so acclaimed, you would think the combination of the two should mean you get a decent uptake there.
Oh, yeah.
Besides the only problem that they might have here, like I said, is that the fan base they have on the PSP, do they expect games that play like the console games, because that's what they've gotten the last few times. I'm curious.
I don't think it'll matter.
That's kind of why I say I think the acclaim is important, that that should hopefully sell them on it.
The name will sell them on it. It's Grand Theft Auto.
But those story games didn't sell particularly great.
They were the best-selling PSP games for a long time, and they released them on, they released both of them on PS2 also. Those versions got pretty bad reviews.
Yeah, because
though.
they didn't deal with the fact that it's a higher resolution system. They just, it's on the TV now. It'll be fine.
That's pretty brutal.
They look terrible. But I think it's pretty interesting. I don't think I would want to play through it again on PSP, but I am very glad that this game is hopefully going to get played by more people. Because
it's really
good. It's absolutely fantastic. Yeah. And I mean, I wish people would go out and buy the DS version. I don't know which one's going to end up being better, but it's a game that deserves to be played by more people because it's really, really, really good. All right, and that ends what I brought. James has one last news story.
Yes. Which one should I go
with?
That
he really feels passionate about.
Oh, okay, that one. So today we got... Was it in the form of a press release, I guess?
It was a singing telegram.
Oh, hey-o.
Well, I don't know if we got the press release or somebody found the story, but they have announced that there is an upcoming game based on the musical and theater performance Grease coming to both the Wii and the DS.
I want to play Summer Nights.
Well, it's the
give me the controller. I want to play Summer Nights.
That game is the one that I want.
Yeah. So far it's been explained thusly. It will use the Wii's microphone, which you've probably forgotten existed.
What, the boogie microphone?
I suppose so. And motion controls. And the DS version will use, quote, the touchscreen. That's all they said. That's all we know about the game. But here are the things I can tell you. One, terrible. Two, the source material, terrible.
Oh, no.
Hey, man.
I like Grease.
The hate flow through.
Grease Lightning? Come on,
three,
man. Have a heart, James.
People involved in production, terrible.
Dude, there aren't many musicals I like, and Grease is one of them.
I mean, I just don't understand how the hell this game came into being. Who was sitting around and going, we need some like really popular franchise to make a Grease.
James, you do realize that recently for DS was announced Murder, She Wrote, the game.
I do realize that. But
the bar
that's pretty
is
bizarre,
right,
too.
But you do realize that Murder, She Wrote is also 10 years newer than Grease.
I don't think it's got the same pop culture resonance as Grease.
And to be fair, Grease is still performed even now. Yeah. So, yes. I mean, it's kept...
Grease is pretty timeless.
You can still watch Murder, She Wrote on A&E. I mean, it's still out there.
Yeah, but it's for, like, 60-year-olds, man. Come on. Grease is hip, dude.
No, it's not.
Grease is the word.
No, I get James's point, though. I mean, you got to imagine in your head this... this executive meeting where some publisher's like, what are kids on the street talking about these days? What are the kids into? High School Musical. Ah, we can't afford that one. I like Grease.
Yeah, I'm just curious, like, who they're aiming this at, really.
Nobody.
Are baby boomers that bought the Wii?
I don't know.
My mom would want to play this for sure.
Are they going to want to... I mean, obviously, you're going to have to sing. Are they going to want to get up and make an ass of themselves in front of every person they have ever met?
They all play Wii Sports. That's the whole thing.
What do you think the bloody chicken soup game's about? Wii Fit Plus?
It's like WarioWare Smooth Moves is all about watching your friends look stupid.
Yeah, but I'm also looking forward to the moment where family gatherings are playing this game and two closely related individuals are singing the Summer Love duet.
I think it'll be more fun when dad is singing Grease Lightning and his daughter's sitting next to him and he gets to the line, "You know I ain't bragging, she's a real pussy wagon." It seems the movie seems so innocuous, but it gets downright raunchy at times.
I can't wait for the Wii motion controls that are involved in the hand jive.
I mean, that's the fact that
I'm ashamed that I know that joke. Oh man!
They've got to be talking about the microphone, the boogie microphone or something like it. They can't
be like a USB microphone. Yeah.
Yeah, they can't be talking about the
what we speak. No.
So you have one microphone in your hand, minimum. But there's motion controls, meaning you're gonna have one microphone to your mouth and your other arm's gonna be flailing the fuck around with the Wii remote.
Maybe it comes with a microphone that has motion controls.
For some reason, I thought the way you phrase that, he's gonna have one microphone to your mouth and one microphone to somewhere
else. It'll probably be one person sings and the other person, you know, does the hand jive.
That's stupid as hell.
You know, I would actually care slightly if like they said they were gonna bring the Grease soundtrack to Rock Band. Because there might be one or two songs I pick up.
But would you buy a whole game based or...
No. No, because someone like Harmonix is not making it. That's probably you can tell it's going to be cheap.
If Harmonix made a Grease game, it would probably be actually very good.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't make sense as a game. I mean, to be honest.
Not really.
It's like...
I mean, there's not that much dancing. I mean, you could kind of do like a DDR karaoke game, I guess, but... Well, that would make more sense than motion control or whatever they're putting into
microphone.
It.
You've only got two hands. Figure it out.
The Wii Remote motion control is actually, you're playing as Sandy learning to smoke, so you kind of have to put it up to your mouth.
Oh, nice.
Okay. So, James hates Grease. There you go. James hates Grease because he's made of soap.
Another bad
Dear
one.
Dear God,
wow.
Johnny, just stop.
Yeah.
Cool your head.
I'm so fucking
now.
Tired and hungry
just,
right
just
now.
Just call it a day.
I know.
What the hell is the other one anyway?
So GameStop has decided they're going to release some new Wii bundles.
Oh, with a buddy bundle, with a bath buddy.
Yes, you can get your Wii with a rubber duck, a quote pirate tattoo, or a summer fun squirt gun.
Yeah.
What in the fuck?
Yeah.
Happened.
Is this a joke?
Does this cost any more?
No.
I see
that.
I think this is the price cut that people like Michael Pachter have been in. There's so much better value now. I just can't help but go for it.
Value added.
It's a Wii with a rubber ducky.
Yes.
They must have like found this shit in the back of their warehouse, and they were like, "Well, what are we gonna do with it?"
I'm just looking at the squirt gun you can get. It's the cheapest fucking squirt gun I've ever seen outside of a Chuck E.
Well,
Cheese.
Well, it's free, James.
James Jones squirt gun appraiser.
Squirt gun aficionado.
I just love the name of the rubber. The name of the rubber ducky bundle is the quote Nintendo Wii Take a Bath with a Buddy bundle.
because I'm pretty sure there are explicit instructions in the Wii's manual to not take a bath with it.
Yeah, really.
Yeah, I'm sure in Japan they've got a little diagram about that.
Yeah.
That you're not.
Yeah. Do not inhale the
Do
Wii
not
remote.
Do not make your Wii take a bath with a buddy. But you know what's funny? We talked about how weird the meeting for Grease must have been. Imagine how weird this meeting was.
Yeah, this is like
I think it was just very warm in
I
the
I think
room.
This was skipping meeting phase, actually, of decision-making.
You know, and the thing is, you know, the sad thing is, I had such a high opinion of GameStop before this. Oh, you want me to... hold on. Okay, so you want me to buy a game for a new price, but you've taken the plastic off of it, and if I give it back to you in 5 seconds, it becomes a used game. Interesting. Okay. All right, GameStop.
All right, let's wrap up this shenanigan. So, thanks very much to Mike Sklins, Striker Obi for being here this week.
Thank you guys for having me back. It was a real treat.
You did a nice job, actually. I'm very proud of you, sir.
You did.
And I hope that we have pushed you in the direction of booting up your Wii or DS.
Bring you back
sometime
in the fold.
Soon. There are really good games out there if you have a guide.
Like Puzzle League, which he did not already know about.
All right. And, of course, thanks to the regular crew. Awesome as always. Every week, we bring the fire.
Bring in the drama.
And one last thing. We didn't get to listener mail this week. We do have some good letters. We'll be getting to them soon. Please keep sending those. Anything you want us to talk about, anything you want to ask us about, anything you want to comment on, make your voice heard. Send those emails to rfn at nintendoworldreport.com. And don't forget to check out Ninja Spirit. I'm looking forward to playing that and talking about that next week for Retroactive. So, with that, we bid thee goodbye, sir.
Good night, everybody.
Later.
Bye. So.
I wonder if Dead Rising is going to be that difficult. When is it released on Wii yet?
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, it was. No, it was just crappy.
It's just bad.
Bad port.
It was just prohibitively crappy. Of course, the only part of that demo anybody who was there of our staff remembers is the now he's going to stomp on my crotch 1,000 times for 3 minutes. And then the game proceeded to have the character just stomp on his crotch for like 3 minutes. It was the weirdest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's the money shot is what they call that, actually.